Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, and I'm joined by just Polly Questel this week. How's it going, Polly?
It's good, but there's no vibes report here.
That's true. And at a time when we kind of need it, too, because for the first time in a couple weeks.
What are the vibes? We just won two in a row, but like, what are the vibes?
Right. I mean, this is also, I mean, I would say the first time under Rangnick we've had consecutive positive results and decent performances. I think, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, maybe we should have scored more than one goal against West Ham. But I would say the big story is, you know, we get our captain back and he shows what he's worth.
Yeah, Maguire definitely had a really good game. I don't know if I'd say back-to-back really good performances. The West Ham match was like a cleaner version, in a different way, a cleaner version of the Crystal Palace match, whereas we had complete control of both matches, Crystal Palace, in different ways. We pressed the hell out of Palace. We didn't do that to West Ham. Mm-hmm. Palace did get like two or three good chances, and that didn't happen against West Ham. We didn't get really any good chances against Palace. We pulled a goal out of our ass versus this game where we didn't get, we got horrific chance. We really got nothing for 91 and a half minutes and then created one good chance, which we buried. Still wouldn't say back-to-back performances because the first half against Brentford was atrocious.
Yeah. Some of the worst football we've probably seen from United this season.
I don't really agree with that. They've definitely played worse before. This was sort of like, I compared it to Villarreal at home, and the similarities were very on point. Is we went with this 4-3-3 at Villa with Matic sitting deep and Fred and Bruno, the two eights, and it worked for 70 minutes until Matic got tired, which is exactly what happened when we essentially did the same thing at Leicester. The Leicester was more of like a 4-1-4-1, but the differences between those two formations are slim to none. And that worked for 70 minutes until Matic got tired, and then you're asking Pogba to cover even more ground, and we got overrun, and result was a loss against Villa. Result was a draw. And similarly, we just came right back out in the next game, although I think Villarreal was... No, Villarreal was not before Leicester, was it?
No, it was Atalanta that was right before Leicester, I think.
No, I think Leicester was off of international break.
Leicester was coming off international break.
And Villarreal was like 2 weeks before that. But in this case, it was like, hey, good formation. It worked. It's just Matic kind of died. So we went to the 4-3-3 with McTominay sitting deep, which is what we did against Villarreal with Pogba and Bruno as the eights. This time it was Fred and Bruno, and it looked exactly the same in that. It was just, we got completely overran. Brentford dominated. Every time Brentford decided to press us, it was free reign at us. And that's partially because we didn't, between Dalot, Varane, Lindelof, Telles, McTominay, there's nobody back there that's going to break your press pretty effectively. You don't have anybody, even McTominay, who's pretty press resistant, mainly because if you run at him, he's very good at stepping away from it. He's not comfortable on the ball the way Matic is, the way Maguire is, the way Luke Shaw is, the way Pogba is, though you could say that Pogba is too comfortable on the ball because he holds it for too long and he loses it too often. But every time Brentford decided they were going to press us, it was like open season on David De Gea. And if Brentford had better players, this would be a United wouldn't have even been in a position where they can win this match. Like it looked like and a thorough beatdown, but
it wasn't even that. I mean, De Gea made, because De Gea did make some good saves, but there were also some where De Gea probably shouldn't have had a chance, and Brentford just put it in a space that was close enough to De Gea that he could make a shot. I mean, at least two in the first half, like clear shots on goal from Brentford.
Yeah, if you're looking for a it's actually. Cool story here is that in the last two games, the comparable matches to last season are all three of the matches against West Ham. This Brentford match looked a lot like the match against West Ham at Olympic Stadium, whatever the hell West Ham Stadium is called these days, where West Ham dominated that match from start to halftime. And if they were any better, they would have put United away. They didn't. They went 1-0 up and they let United hang around. But like they had, I mean, Sebastian Aller had like that breakaway where he just like fell down.
Right.
Like, and that's, I mean, not so like he didn't even get a shot. Like the XG was just like off the charts in that game in favor of West Ham. And like that doesn't even account for Sebastian Aller having a breakaway and just falling down. And I think there were some other situations where like they didn't even get a shot off where like a good team would. And in the second half, United got that somewhat lucky or fortunate goal when the ball went out of bounds and Pogba got the shot. And that brought West Ham out of their shell. They started coming at us again and leaving space in behind. And United went, right, this is what we're good at.
But, I mean, another difference, though, is because, I mean, West Ham were kind of going at them and leaving space a little bit in the first half. But in the second half, Manchester United had Bruno Fernandes in the number 10 role.
They had Bruno Fernandes and they had Marcus Rashford.
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, you're running in behind Marcus Rashford sitting on the bench being like, boss, this is the only thing I do. This is it. Put me out there. And yeah, like Rashford actually missed an easy chance in that match, which should have made it like 4-1. But yeah, they played, West Ham played right into United's hands there. And United blew out the doors. And at the end of the day, like you look at the XG, which was like very even, and I think a little bit in favor of West Ham, final score is 3-1. Against Brentford, because they didn't put United away or even go up 1-0, they came out in the second half playing exactly the same way. And United made one little switch. They dropped the 4-3-3. They went back to a 4-2-3-1 because they're like, huh, seems like we use that from pretty often, not because we want to, but because we need to. And it was like, oh, and Brentford continued to just run at United. And they were like, oh, well, we're just going to hit you on the break the other way. And they got some. The first goal was just the heads up play of Anthony Elanga. Like, that's what United have been missing this season.
That was the lucky break, sort of like Pogba goal, of like a moment of really, you know, good individual play.
Yeah, but this was like Pogba's was, all right, you get the lucky break in that ball's out of play and the ref doesn't give it. And then Pogba just hits a long shot, which is, okay, it's Paul Pogba, so he's got a better chance of hitting that than the average player or the good player. But still, it's Paul Pogba. He's probably not going to hit that too often. This was like Anthony Longa makes the smart play where you make that smart run and you play that ball. And like a lot of times you're going to end up with a chance there. And a lot of times that you end up with a chance there, you're going to score. And like Longa, it wasn't clean. He did a really good job of staying with that ball and being able to head it in. But United have been missing that when someone like Ronaldo, they've been missing this also. Like we're not like saying, have a striker that creates space for others. And Ronaldo's not like, he doesn't look around. He doesn't see Anthony Elanga. He doesn't be like, oh, I'm going to drop here to pull the center back out. He's dropping. And like, you could see him, he's pointing to his feet. Like he wants Fred to play him that ball. Mm-hmm. And this is just a heads up play by Elanga. As soon as Ronaldo goes, he goes. And Fred spots the run and plays the ball. And like that's what United need to do more of, especially if you have a striker that's going to move around. When he leaves, when he vacates his space, someone go. Because either if the center back doesn't follow him, then, well, you're leaving Ronaldo and you're allowing him to get the ball, which at this point of his career, if you give him the ball 40 yards out from goal, that's probably not the worst defensive strategy you can have. He's probably not hitting that shot that he hit against Porto in the Champions League again.
Well, he just doesn't get that space. I mean, he's somebody that defenders keep attention on, you know, whenever he's involved in play. And you know, with the way that his touch is now, like you said, it's a pretty good bet he's going to give the ball away.
Right, but that's exactly the point, is he doesn't get space because someone goes with him. So if someone goes with him, you go into that space because that's free. And like, we've had so much discussion about Marcus Rashford over the last month, and he's had 2 goals in the past 2 games. It's brought a smile back on his face, but he got dropped for 2 games or possibly more. When was the last time he started? The FA Cup, I think. So he's been dropped for like 3 games now. If he were just to make the runs off the ball that Anthony Elanga does, if he were to just be like, huh, what Anthony Elanga is doing isn't like a special skill. It's just being smart and being hungry.
Mm-hmm.
If he were to do the same thing, he would never have been dropped. He'd be an unbelievable player, and he'd be someone that's scoring 20 Premier League goals a season. Like, he can add 7 or 8 goals to his total by just making those runs. And he just isn't doing it, except when he plays on the right, he does. And voila, look at how he scored that goal on Saturday.
That conversation we've had before.
Is all the ball goes out to Edinson Cavani. There's no, if he's on the left-hand side, like, he might be playing for a cutback here, but there's not. There's nowhere for him to go except to the net. He goes to the net, ball shows up, boom, it's a tap-in.
By the way, we didn't have a podcast last week. I had COVID and there were some other scheduling conflicts. So sorry about that. But in both the Brentford and the West Ham game, and even the Aston Villa game, I would say, I think one thing, or one of the big takeaways I've had, is that Ralf Rangnick has kind of figured out how to use Bruno Fernandes a little bit better now. And keeping him located more centrally and keeping him more involved, it has resulted, like you pointed out, that Bruno is basically shouldering the entire weight of creativity for this team at times, and that's going to lead to Bruno giving the ball away. But I think it's, you know, a risk worth taking at times, and especially right now when we have zero creativity outside of Bruno Fernandes.
I don't know if that's the risk worth taking, because you shouldn't have to take it. In this particular scenario, Jadon Sancho is dealing with a personal matter. Paul Pogba's still hurt.
Right.
You do have Marcus Rashford on the right wing, which is, has last season when he played there, showed to be a more creative option. And with a striker like Ronaldo, who needs that kind of service, that's not the worst thing in the world. And when you got a player like Anthony Elanga on the left, who will make those runs to the back post. So if like Ronaldo makes a near post run, Elanga's going to follow him up to the back post.
Just short side note, I think that's something nice that separates Elanga from like Greenwood and maybe even Cavani, of, you know, we've seen at times, sometimes strikers are making the same run when they're playing next to Ronaldo, or like they're both going for the same ball in the same area. And I think Elanga is a nice complement to that.
It's glorious. And I disagree with that also, in that I don't think we see them going for the same ball. I think Ronaldo makes these runs like in front of the net, 'cause you know, that's what he does. And he's expecting the ball to be played there. Whereas Greenwood and Rashford tend to just hang out at like, oh, here's a little bit of space, and like, this would be a good space to shoot. I'm going to drop back for the cutback, and they expect that pass to me. Or like, you know, they kind of don't want to go to the dirty area. They kind of want to be like, well, I'm going to hang out back here, and if the cross is over hit, they're going to forget that I'm here, and then I'm, you know, I have that chance. Elanga, it's like when Cavani makes that run too, and he made that run a lot last season, of like that near post run. And then it's like, all right, but if it goes over his head or something, who's following that up for the easy tap in at the back post or something? And we just haven't had the strikers do that. So yes, like, it's very refreshing to see Elanga do that. I don't like putting everything onto Bruno Fernandes' shoulders, because it's not just the creativity. I'm fine putting all the creativity. No, I'm not.
I mean, right now I am, because we, like you said, Jadon Sancho's been out with a personal matter and Paul Pogba's not back, et cetera. But like, when Pogba comes back, you expect him to maybe play off the left in the sort of wide playmaker role that Rangnick likes. And when Sancho comes back, I'd expect him to be either on the left or the right. You know, these are players that I expect to start eventually alongside Bruno Fernandes. But currently, while he is shouldering this burden, he is also playing more the role that he was playing under Solskjaer when he was so successful, rather than being pushed out to either a right wing or left wing creative position.
I disagree with that too, because I think he was playing much deeper. You look at his touch map and the percentage of touches he's taken, which this season has been wild how much more they're using him deeper. And that's part of the problem. So like, but just an enormous amount of his touches came in the middle third as opposed to the attacking third. So last season, like when in games that United won, 51% of his touches came in the attacking third and only 42% in the middle third. In games that they drew, it was 47% in the middle third and 46% in the final third. And look at all the draws that they had last year. There's Leicester at 2-2 and Everton at 3-3, and the rest were all basically 0-0. Some of that is because they were defending the whole game, like against Chelsea and City and pinned back. But it's like, you get Bruno further up the pitch, you're going to score more, good things happen. This season, he's back to like 46% of his touches are coming in the middle third and only 43% in the attacking third. And look at what his numbers are. He's got how many goals? How many assists? He's got five assists and what? Five goals? Six goals, maybe? Six, I think.
Yeah. But that has been doubled in the last, what, two, three games?
Yeah, because he scored twice against Villa.
Villa and then against Brentford, yeah.
And so it's actually funny because he was one of the highest games that, where 53% of his touches came in the middle third against Leeds, which is the game that he was the most potent in. So he was just very efficient against Leeds, but also who ran the show was Paul Pogba. And it's he dropped deeper to play with McTominay and Fred, which is what happened a lot last season and when he first arrived and literally on Saturday, is because they can't progress the ball. And you're playing without Shaw also, who, like Alex Telles, doesn't do any of that crap. So when Bruno drops deep, that's why Paul Pogba became so successful on the left wing and why United started to click, because it was like Bruno could progress the ball and now they still had a creator up there. And Pogba can then pull the strings and create, and then Bruno can make runs into the box, etc., which is how they dominated Leeds. 58% of his touches came in the attacking, in the middle third against West Ham, only 35% in the attacking third. Like, that's some of his lowest numbers all season. So what I don't like is that when you are starting Ilanga, Ronaldo, and Greenwood, none of whom are really great in the middle attacking third. Like, put it this way, even when Bruno stays high up the pitch, he still basically leads the team in progressive passes. So, like, they're getting the ball up to Bruno, and then he's in turn going and progressing the ball further to the creative, to the attacking players, the potent ones. When Bruno drops deeper to play, like, alongside McTominay and Fred in that midfield, okay, now you have your ball progressor there, and he progresses the ball to three players who are all shoot first players and not particularly creative, and you're not progressing the ball into dangerous places from that next standpoint. They're not going from point A to point B to point C. They're just going from point A to point B. And that's why when you look at it, like, United had 17 shots for less than a goal of XG prior to that Rashford chance, because they just weren't creating anything, because their only creator was playing deeper, getting him on the ball more, yes, but doing a lot of the things that it's like Bruno Fernandes isn't the best at. So I don't know if we're using Bruno Fernandes the best, but I do think if you add a Jadon Sancho or a Paul Pogba, this changes the dynamic significantly, and it might very well become using Bruno the best.
Right. And, you know, like you said, we'll get him in scoring positions as well to get on the end of chances created rather than, you know, be the one behind the ball at the start of the play.
Yeah. That game against West Ham, Bruno against West Ham, reminded me a ton of 2019 against Barcelona in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. First and second leg. And the game that like either sandwiched them or came right after, but that 4-0 against Everton was, we started that game against Everton in a 4-2-3-1 with Paul Pogba playing as the number 10. Because if you remember, and who would forget, is that when Solskjaer first took over, Pogba went on a tear, and then everybody got hurt. Pogba was still in the 11, but he stopped doing things, and everybody was like, oh, he's done it. And that all happened right around the international break where he mentioned, oh, it's a dream to play for Real Madrid. So suddenly, as soon as he's not scoring goals, it was, well, he's not trying anymore. So Solskjaer moved him further up the pitch. And in that 4-0 against Everton, United just couldn't even get him the ball. Like, they couldn't move the ball from the midfielders to the number 10. And then he came back. And against Barcelona, they played him deep from the get-go. And he did the defensive work, but
we also had two or three chances in the opening 15 minutes before Messi scored that goal.
Yeah, but I think it was like the home leg where basically Pogba was playing deep, so they had no creator further forward, and basically the entire attack was Pogba just has to play long balls to Rashford because there was nothing at, like, it was like, we need you deep, but now we don't have you further up the pitch. And then against Everton, they were like, well, we missed you further up the pitch, so we put you up the pitch, and now we can't get you the ball. And that to me was Bruno on Wednesday. It was the same thing. Was, well, if I go further up the field, you can't get me the ball. And when I'm back here, the attack is really just, I gotta, you know, try to play these ambitious balls that rarely work, and it's like he ends up giving the ball away a ton.
Obviously this happened 3 years ago, so we maybe shouldn't be talking about it, but what I remember about that home leg is our midfield actually doing a pretty good job against Barcelona's.
They did a great job.
Still we had, you know, hardly any clear-cut chances in front of goal.
It was because well, first of all, Rashford was also playing that game on one leg because he had gotten hurt against Liverpool, and that never healed.
Just kept playing.
Yeah. In that game where Solskjaer made three first half subs because everybody got hurt, Rashford actually got hurt first and said, no, I'm good. I'm going to try to keep playing. And I think if Rashford had to come off, he doesn't bring on Jesse Lingard, and we don't end up like having to make – we don't end up losing Lingard for further time.
Right.
But Rashford's like, no, I'm good. I'm going to keep playing. And he was okay. Then we used all three subs, and then he got another knock on the ankle, and it was like, oh, now he can't move. Yeah. So against Barcelona and against Everton, he was playing on one leg, but it was just a matter of like the midfield played really well. Then they got the ball, and it was like, we have nowhere to go with it. Yeah, like Rashford on one leg, Romelu Lukaku on bad form. I think it was like Alexis Sanchez on the right. I forget who was on the right.
Diogo Dalot played that game.
He might have been the guy on the right. I'm like, that's exactly the point.
He missed a header in front of goal. And it was like, if literally any of our other players on the pitch are on that header, it's probably going in the back of the net.
He also missed He missed a very good header in Bruno's first game against Wolves, which would have won the game in injury time. Diogo Dalot's claim to fame is, I'm better in possession than Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And it's like, yes.
But
the bar there is really low.
His other claim to fame is he technically won the penalty against PSG.
Right. Yeah. But like that's basically why Diogo Dalot is now firmly in the 11. It's because you're better than Aaron Wan-Bissaka, but he's still not good. It's like $10 is twice as much money as $5. It's still not a lot of money.
All right, so we have, 10 more days off without Manchester United. We're in the winter break now. We get a little bit of...
10 more days? That's amazing.
Oh, yeah, they come back and they play Middlesbrough in the FA Cup. How are you feeling? Maybe not going to vibes analysis, but like, how are you feeling about, you know, leaving things as they were this weekend? You know, getting a little bit of a break, getting a rejuvenated squad back. How are you feeling going forward from here?
Oh, that's a great question. I had a long talk with Suede about this, like, last Tuesday.
By the way, Suede, come on the pod.
Yeah. And we discussed, like, the direction that Ragnik's going in. And the gist of it at the start was, like, I'm not exactly thrilled with him or impressed by it. Because it just seems like he's running through all the same ideas that we've already had. But at the same time, you can't blame him for that. We watch United every week. We know certain things don't work. He's a manager of RB Leipzig. Then he gets a job with Lokomotiv Moscow. Like, why would he be watching Manchester United every week?
But also, then, I think something that, you know, maybe separates us from others who have been super critical of Solskjaer throughout his tenure is that, you know, as people who have viewed Solskjaer as a pretty good manager, and I still think he was a pretty good manager for us, you know, these are things he tried and went through, and, you know, this is a process that was already went through. So, like, to us, it kind of seems like, well, yeah, that's not going to work already. You know what I mean?
Right. That's exactly the, it's exactly it. It's someone a couple weeks ago was like, it's too much of the same stuff, which, by the way, interim managers tend to be a lot of the same stuff. They don't tend to rock the boat too much. Solskjaer was kind of the exception there. But it's like, oh, he still has this over-reliance on McFred. And it's like, well, is it an over-reliance on McFred, or is it look around and who else is there? And that, oh, this team has three midfielders. And everybody who goes, well, McTominay and Fred shouldn't be playing this much. Well, it's like, well, and then they'll be like, but Matic can't play every game. And he could barely play 90 minutes of a game now, as we're finding out. All of it comes from everybody being like, well, why is Donny van de Beek not playing? And it's like, Donny van de Beek plays a different position. He's not a midfielder. Here's the best way to think of Donny van de Beek. He is like French fries or chips. In that, when I am cooking dinner and I go, I need my meal, I need my protein, and then I need I'm having company, so I need to put out a green vegetable. So I'm looking at green vegetables like broccoli and I don't know other green stuff. I basically only eat broccoli, string beans.
Broccoli is the best vegetable.
Yeah, string beans, peas, etc. Something in that realm, where then you could tell me like you. Well, I have got these French fries here. French fries are potatoes. That's a vegetable. And it's like, yes, it is. But I need the green vegetable. The French fries add something to it. And that's like, because that's your attacking midfielder. So I could serve them with it. I could serve steak and broccoli and French fries. And the French fries are going to add something. But I need that green vegetable first. And then you'll be like, well, last week Ragnik went out of his way to praise Van de Beek and everything. And like, you last week had hamburgers and you served them with French fries. And it's like, yes, like, because burgers and fries, they did the trick there. But this is a fancy meal. And like, And like that's fine to do once a week, but like most weeks I got it, most 6 nights a week I gotta eat healthy. So I need the green vegetable as the primary thing, and that's not the French fries. That's Donnie Van de Beek. Like,
I think this Donnie Van de Beek as a side dish is, you know, top five poly metaphors on the Busby Bay podcast.
Thank you. I've been workshopping that one for a while, and I just shoehorned it in there. But anyway.
But Polly, how are you feeling?
So one of the things that like I've had a problem with is it just doesn't seem like he seems to be running through all the same things. And it's okay. Yeah, Solskjaer tried this too. Like I said, I think Solskjaer played the 4-2-3-1. It was clear he didn't want to play that, as all the rumors suggested over the summer. And then this season he immediately just started by he did it in the first game, and then against Southampton already went to a diamond more or yeah, like more of a diamond or 4-2-2-2 really.
And then on the 29th, all of our plans went out the window anyway.
Yeah. And then, and even against West Ham, like if you watch the way Pogba defended, he wasn't defending like a left winger. He was defending like a left central midfielder. So it seemed like he wanted to get away from that as well. And it just, I think time and time again, he came down to, I have to play this way in order to get the results that I'm trying to get. And with Ragnick, I'm not certain he's going with the best option. So like the West Ham match was good. It was like, all right, good. Maguire came back into the team. Like how many times do I have to watch Varane and Lindelof do half the freaking job? Like you want, like Maguire comes out of the team. First of all, the defensive numbers, not that much better. They're a little bit better right now because that total is skewed heavily by the Liverpool and Leicester matches where Maguire was definitely not fit and shouldn't have been playing, which when we look back at this season, I think those are going to be, especially in terms of Harry Maguire, those are going to be the asterisk matches, the way that Crystal Palace, Brighton, and 6-1 against Spurs were the throw them away. There was no preseason. We were dealing with COVID matches from last season. And
I think with the Leicester match too, you have to include that Harry Maguire was the subject of targeted, you know, fan chanting, abuse, whatever, for 90 minutes.
Right.
In a performance where his team was being embarrassed, apart from just himself.
Right, and like he was bad in the Liverpool match, but like let's not get carried away and be like he lost them that match. That team was run off the pitch 3 minutes into the game.
And by a team that has been built to, and you know, has been tried and tested at the highest level for 3 or 4 years now.
Right. So the West Ham, like I said, the West Ham match gave me some hope for the future of the team, because Maguire came back in the team and you already see how solid this team looks, and you're not, what else are you going to do? You have to play McTominay and Fred. All right. Like McTominay is now playing as this more defensive midfielder, which he's not particularly good at. It's not his strength, but then again, like his strength, he's not good enough at his strength to be a player for Manchester United. Like he's all right. He's at his best when you let him be the more attacking eight, and he can run into the box, get on the end of headers, but mostly just shoot from the top of the box. But he can't pass. He's not creative enough to like play that role at the level that Manchester United need that player to play.
I think too, he has been one of the players early that has bought into Ragnick's system and been utilized well, just because he has a really high work rate as well.
He is, and that was obviously going to happen because he's the ultimate coach's player. And like I think I've spoken about this before, but like McTominay is like the player that I see the most of myself in that we understand our limitations and we understand our friends on the team are better than us at a lot of things. The only way I'm getting on the pitch is if I do exactly what the coach says. And if the coach wants players who are going to do this, if I'm doing it, he's got no reason not to play me. And so McTominay was always going to do that. And he has been much better under Ralph Ragnick. The issue with Scott McTominay is much better is it's as we are seeing in the results, it's still not good enough.
It's still just fine.
Right. It's still not good enough. And the big issue with Scott McTominay is when Scott McTominay is good, he's not making anybody else better. He's doing the things that stick out in your mind, especially in the English game. He's going in hard to challenges. He's breaking plays up. He's taking the ball and he's driving forward with it. What do you do once you drive forward with it? This is something that I've read about, like Declan Rice, of how he's a big carrier and everything, but then he's just laying it off and it's like, it's not doing much of it. Or Mark Thompson wrote this great piece about Aaron Wan-Bissaka this week and said, like, what did we all miss in 2019? Like, and he looked back at it and he was like looking at the numbers and he was like, look, like, one of the things that Wan-Bissaka was really good at that was praised was his dribbling and how he took on players and he beat them at a very good rate. But like, let's look beyond that, which we didn't do back then. He's beating people on the dribble. And that, like, once you beat people on the dribble, you need to pass and do something useful with the ball. And he couldn't do that. It's like, all right, you got yourself into space. Now make the killer pass. He can't. That's kind of McTominay also. Like, Brentford played right into his hand. We know McTominay's good when you press him. We know McTominay's good when he just has to hit the ball into space and let us run. On the counterattack, he's great. We know if you run at him, he is pretty good at sidestepping away from you and then taking you in and driving forward. Brentford played right into his hands. Like, that's why he's so good against Leeds all the time too, because that's how Leeds play. Mm-hmm. What we need to see is you do the other things, and like, he's not. So like, when McTominay is good and he's driving forward with the ball, then it comes to, like, at one point against West Ham, he played this great 1-2 with Diogo Dalot to like move the ball 40 yards up the pitch. And now it's like, now he's right at the top of the box. What do you do? He doesn't have an answer for that. And it was, I'm just going to give the ball up. Like, I'm going to make a 3-yard square pass to Bruno, because he's still not that comfortable on the ball as opposed to, but that's what sticks out in your mind. And that's what, when fans say, oh, he's grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck or he's scoring the goals. Like Roy Keane against Juventus, the best pieces to read about that are the retroactive ones where people go back and watch the game and they go, I know what to expect. And that wasn't what I expected. Is Roy Keane went and scored 2 goals, which was huge. The rest of the game, he was just Roy Keane. He wasn't like dominating the Juventus midfield. And like, that's kind of McTominay. Is like, when McTominay's good, McTominay is good. Whereas there are other players who are very good at, even when it doesn't look like they're having a huge impact, the rest of their team are able to thrive. Like, everybody says Paul Pogba doesn't impact games enough, and yet United's attacking numbers for 6 years now, when he's on the pitch, are way better, and when he's off the pitch, they're way worse, because he's letting his teammates, he's putting his teammates in positions to succeed. It's like when you go back to watch the Europa League final, McTominay stood out in that match. And I tweeted during the match, I was like, Scott McTominay's been our best player today by a mile. And then I went and rewatched the game a day or two later, and I was like, he wasn't good in this game. Because it was like, he broke up a lot of plays and he was all over the place. What did he do with the ball then? Nothing. So like, it's like, great, you won the ball back. How did you turn that into like a advantage for our team? You didn't. And as a midfielder, that's the other half of your job.
That's kind of the thing about like the eye test or whatever, but especially when it's a team that you're a fan of or that you support or that you want to do well, is that when you latch onto the good things, they're really going to, you know, stick out to you. Whereas, if there's a player on your team, like Ronaldo, who is constantly doing bad things, those are the things I'm going to latch onto, you know, the things that he does poorly, even if he'll go and score 2 goals in the same game or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Yannick Bolasie came, I think it was Yannick Bolasie, somebody who played for Crystal Palace, a couple months ago just came out and was like, people don't know how to, like, evaluate the game at all, especially for midfielders. Like, I would have games where I had a goal and an assist, and played like absolute crap. And people people would be messaging me and being like, you had a great game. And I was like, I didn't do the things that I was supposed to do. I just happened to score a goal. And one time when I passed the ball to somebody, they happened to score.
Right. So I feel like, sorry, did you have someone else?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, there's no doubt McTominay's been playing well. But also, like, he went through this purple patch last December and January, too.
Right.
And I don't want to say it's not going to continue because his good form has perfectly coincided with Ralf Rangnick's arrival. So perhaps it's because of the manager, and this will continue all season, but it needs to be better. But they took off Fred with 8 minutes to go, and that makes sense because Fred was the one getting higher up the pitch, and it was like, you're not – against Brentford, he made some good passes. Against Villa, he made some good passes, was pretty creative, wasn't doing that against whoever we played recently, West Ham. So, like, okay, that's the logical move. You take him out. Bruno was pulled back deeper so that you now had a back three, basically. Like, Bruno was the one being tasked with dropping into the defensive line to be the back three next to Maguire and Varane, because now it was like, hey, the two guys who passed the ball forward the most – well, they're back there to pass the ball forward. That makes sense. Plus, you take McTominay, you push him up to be like, what are you really good at? Getting into the box and shooting from the top of the box. But United didn't create any chances there because your midfielder, who's basically the only creative guy in the team, because you have four strikers on the pitch now, and Dalot and Telles, who Dalot's not going to give you anything, and Telles is not going to give you anything more than the cross, can't pass. Like, there's the weaknesses of your game. Like, every time he has a good game because you play into his strengths, it's like when they need him to do something else, it's just not there. And you, like, Fred wasn't doing that either. So, like, the hole in the midfield is just so drastic that it has to be, you have to figure out a way to cover it up every single game, which I don't think Solskjaer gets enough credit for doing all of last season, and now Rangnick has to do it, and he's doing a decent job at it.
Yeah. I think, back to the McTominay work rate thing, I think when you're in slumps of form, those are the kind of players that stick out, and when you're trying to get out of it, will, you know, be along the way to put the effort in, obviously.
That's one exactly. Remember the end of that 2019 season when McTominay won, like, player of the month, and everybody's like, oh, he's the best player. Like,
he's the only one who gives a shit or whatever.
Yeah, and it was like, well, also, he hadn't been like, when Solskjaer ran the team into the ground from December to March, April-ish, McTominay wasn't playing. He didn't come back into the team until the second leg of that PSG game. He was the only one that was fresh. And yeah, the rest of the guys, Rashford, as we said, was playing on one foot. Lukaku, Alexis, they didn't care. Mata, even if he is trying hard, can't run fast. McTominay was the only one that had energy. And he wasn't good. Like, if you go back and watch those games, he wasn't good. He's a way better player now than he was then. Mm-hmm. But he stood out in everybody's mind as he's our best player right now. And it's like, he was trying.
He was, you know, absent through a lot of the project restart, really good run of form as well, because it was, you know, Pogba, Matic, or I think Fred would come in at times as well.
He started that Tottenham game and was poor. And then he started the match against Crystal Palace, like next to Pogba, and was really probably the definition of not bad, where it was like, he's not costing us the match, but like, he's definitely holding the team back. If you look at it. And then Matic came on with a half hour later, and it was like, oh, right, this is what a good midfielder looks like.
Yeah, all I remember about that game is that we were lucky to win 2-0. And also the De Gea save on the free kick by, I think, Milivojevic was probably the one who took it. But so big picture going forward, I think I've already kind of moved on from the idea of Rangnick being a full-time manager beyond this season. And I think I'm more excited about the prospect of him getting this chance to evaluate the squad firsthand and pick a manager and scout for the future from there. Because I think part of it is that I've already moved on from the idea of United being competitive. That was something I did back in like November, December. You know, obviously I have hopes that we can get a cup run or something, and I think this team is talented enough to do something like that, but I'm just not sure that Ranić is someone who unlocks something special or next level in this squad, I guess is what I'm trying to say. At least not this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to how he approaches things once he's got his full squad at his disposal. It would be hard to come by to drop Anthony Elanga right now. He's playing well, scored a goal. He's doing all the things that you want your left wing to be doing. Like 100% deserves to be playing over Marcus Rashford right now. But you need to put at least Paul Pogba or Jadon Sancho into this team. Probably both. Probably be crazy to not put both in there. But again, like, where are you going to put Pogba? Is he going to put Pogba on that left wing? If you put him in a 4-3-3, you kind of need Fred in there to basically do what Ander Herrera did when Solskjaer first came over, took over. And really open up Pogba, in which case, where does Bruno go? So I guess that's an option if you want to give Bruno rest for a game. Otherwise, you're putting him on the left wing, which we've seen has trouble being effective there next to Ronaldo, because Ronaldo likes to move around as opposed to Cavani, who's going to stay on the center back's shoulder and leave that space for Bruno and Pogba to do everything. Or you're going to look at it and be like, Matic can only play 70 minutes, and other than that, I only have McTominay and Fred. I, like all the managers before me, are just going to move Pogba back and play him deeper, which I guess could happen, but you run into all the same issues. Like, Pogba Fred doesn't work as well as it should. It doesn't have enough muscle in midfield. And Pogba McTominay doesn't work at all, because teams just go, oh, we'll put three players on Paul Pogba and leave McTominay wide open and go, you beat us. You make these passes. And he can't. So figuring that out is what I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah. All right. I guess we'll be back next week to preview Middlesbrough in the FA Cup. So I'll spend that time learning about how Middlesbrough's season has gone, because I've not paid attention to them at all.
They're somewhere in the championship. Like, we should win this match.
Yeah.
In fact, just put Mason Greenwood as the center forward, because this is the right game to be. I mean, you don't need to rest Ronaldo, because he's been resting on the beach for a week now, taking lots of pictures. But put Mason Greenwood in there at center forward, put Pogba on the wing, because he's supposed to be back. Let Jadon Sancho get a run out. Let's see how it looks against the championship team.
Yeah, let's
don't do all that against the championship team, because if like they're all rusty for a game, then it gives you the excuse to be like, well, it didn't work.
But on the other hand, what's the value of just going out and destroying a team?
Right. I mean, right. That's if it works.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, this team definitely has a cup run in them, because you have Ronaldo, who, if you play the right way, like, can come up with, and he's motivated, and he's probably not going to be motivated in the FA Cup, but like, or any more motivated than he is in the Premier League, but he's definitely motivated to win in Europe. Mm-hmm. And you can do exactly what all of his previous teams have done, which is pack it in, play tight, go for those 1-0, 2-0 victories, which is how United won the Champions League with him. It's how Real Madrid won the Champions League with him. It's how Portugal won the Euros with him. I mean, they didn't have him in the final, but that's how they made it to the final, was they just hunkered down
right
and said, we're not going to concede, and that's what Real Madrid did. And, like, that's why I laugh when people compare, like, Pogba to Kroos and Modric. And it's like, first of all...
Because Kroos has Modric and Modric has Kroos.
Yeah, they're like, he doesn't impact the game as consistently the way Kroos and Modric do. And it's like, well, it's a big help that Kroos and Modric have each other.
And then also, right behind them is the, you know, muscly Casemiro, who can go and bully people when he wants to.
Right, and it's like, when you put... If you have Pogba on the pitch and you put three guys on him and make... And be like, we're going to make your partner do all the passing... And your partner can't do that. You don't do that to Luka Modric because Toni Kroos will be like, fine, I'll make all the passes. And you don't do it to Toni Kroos because he'll be like, I'll just give it to Luka Modric. But also, those players when they were allowed to run free in the league, like they didn't win the league every year. And yes, they came up against a very good Barcelona side for a decade. But that was a 2.5 team league. Where, like, all right, Atletico Madrid gets a fluke win once. They won it, like, three times.
Yeah, that's a pretty big half. Like, also, I would say, I mean, this is a whole other, maybe we should get on a La Liga podcast for this, but, like, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid were much more made to win the league year in and year out, whereas...
Right, Real Madrid had these great players, but, like, the way they did that was they basically went 4-4-2 and were like... We're going to pack it in two blocks defensive. Don't let them score because all we got to do is create six chances in the game. And we've got Cristiano Ronaldo who will put away one of them.
Right.
And we'll win this tie 1-0, 2-0 on aggregate.
Give us space, Bayern Munich, see what happens.
Yeah. Atletico Madrid won it all three or two or three times, however many times they won it, by doing the same thing with just like, scoring like 49 goals in a 38 game season
and conceding like 19.
Right. And it's not like it wasn't like they, oh, okay. But they went 4-0 against Real Madrid and Barcelona. It's like Real Madrid and Barcelona would always drop the title because they drop points to Getafe. And like, that's the thing. It's like somehow like, oh, you're Luka Modric and Toni Kroos midfield. Like it's one thing to go up against Atletico Madrid and not be able to break them down and to lose to Barcelona because they're so good. But like those guys should be rolling over everybody else in La Liga.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a nice little La Liga side bit there to end the podcast. I'm sorry Nathan couldn't be a part of it. We'll probably hopefully get him on next week. And thanks for listening.
And eat your vegetables.